There's a house on the edge of town that everyone knows about. A house, not a home. Maybe it's on the top of a barren hill, secluded from the rest of your community. Or maybe it's nestled between two pristine houses in your best friend's neighborhood, an eyesore to the adjacent owners. When you were younger, an old woman lived there. Day in and day out, she'd chain-smoke cigarettes on her porch, and you'd sit there watching her as she sat in her decrepit rocking chair. Or maybe you saw no one at all, like ever. It was that enigmatic presence in your life that you could never seem to escape. Questions of who lived in the house or who that woman was incited a curiosity in you that you couldn't seem to quench. It haunted you like the ghosts that you imagined dwelled within its walls. Whatever the case, I think many of us can relate to narratives like this. A place doesn't necessarily have to be haunted in order for us to feel these things. Maybe it simply has a strange aura or aesthetic about it that begs you to want to know more. To climb up those rickety steps, one after another, and walk through that lacerated screen door. Hoping that you'll be able to exit the same way you came, only this time with a story to tell your friends. It's hard for me to deny the urge to learn the histories of the places that surround me. And I think that's true for a lot of us. The communal and personal mythologies that we create for ourselves seem to be inescapable. And I think there's a reason that children like connected dots, and it's not just because they're fun, because they are, but I think there's something else about it. I think we like to form connections and see where our stories end. The problem is that life doesn't give us that luxury. We will never get to see all the angles of the room. We're never going to get all of our questions answered, and we're never going to have all the pieces to complete the puzzle. But what if you did? That's where we found this really interesting story.
This house, you walk into it, and houses like that already give you a feeling. Already kind of, you walk in and you can sense the history of the place.
Okay, so today we're going to introduce you to a story that we came across in the Omaha theater community.
I'm Spencer Williams. I am a director and a producer.
My name is Bill Grennan. I am one of the producers and designers for Walk the Night.
It's about a version of Hamlet that they performed in a haunted house. And the cool part about it was that it was a totally immersive and interactive experience. As an audience member, you could go anywhere you wanted in this house.
As an audience member, if I see a character that starts walking upstairs and I think that something's going to happen up there, I'll follow that character, whereas two of my buddies will go and follow a servant and see what they do, and they'll lead them downstairs. So you have the story of Hamlet is happening, but it's happening all at once.
So you know those choose-your-own-adventure books, like if you try to knock down the door, turn to page 23, or if you try to find the key in a bag full of bones, turn to page 37. So imagine the real-life version of that, plus an American Depression-era Hamlet plotline.
So that we would have people come see it once and they would follow Claudius. And then maybe halfway through they change to Hamlet. Then they would see it again and only follow Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Then they would see it again and only follow servants. Some people would go and just stay in one room.
We like this story because it plays around with some questions that we've been asking ourselves a lot lately. Like, what are hauntings?
And what exactly does it mean for a place or a person to be haunted? So what we're going to do right now is we're going to try to give you a sense of what it's like to walk around this house.
With the play happening all around you.
What are you listening to?
You are listening
to the Looncast.
You're listening to the Looncast.
So it's the 1920s. And you're in a Victorian mansion.
You walk in through a side door and wait in a sort of small kitchen and in a small sitting area.
Everyone around you is wearing a mask.
And then music sort of changes to feeling much more of the era. A woman walks in, lays the premise for the house's existence, and that being a gathering of people has come together to perform a seance, because in this house, this was the site of foul and unnatural acts. You are our guests, we all are the guests of the ghosts. At which point, she opens the door to the house and leads you as the audience through from the bottom floor of the house all the way in a sort of rounding set of staircases to the top floor of the house. Every single door as you walk through is closed. You get to the top of the stairs and she calls Horatio forth as one of the audience members. The seance begins with him. The ghosts are called up. You hear doors opening all around the house. Music begins and the audience is left.
My girl, don't lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? Come on, tell me, baby. In the pond, where the sun don't ever shine. I was shivering all night too.
Okay, so it's Hamlet, and if you're like me, you probably don't remember this story because it's been since 10th grade.
Okay, yeah. So Hamlet kicks off when the ghost of Hamlet's father approaches him and says, "You need to avenge my death. Your uncle, my brother, has killed me in order to marry my wife, your mother, and become the king of Denmark." What's interesting about that is... And what a lot of people focus on in the kind of the story of Hamlet is you have that inciting incident. The play could be very short. All right, now Hamlet's job is to go and kill the king. Boom, done. So get to it, bud. But Hamlet delays, and Hamlet doesn't do it, and he can't do it. And it's not clear why. You spend the whole play with Hamlet wrestling with himself and trying to understand why he can't just go do this thing. That there's something in him that won't let him and can't make sense of why not.
So as you walk around and you explore this house, you can come across these one-on-one moments with the ghosts where they try to explain to you what haunted them.
At some point when Hamlet sees something happen that really irks him, and there are people all around in this house watching this scene unfold, Hamlet will all of a sudden turn and make direct eye contact. These characters have never stared at anybody yet. All of a sudden, one actor makes direct eye contact with a person and then reaches their hand out. Then Hamlet would take them, and he took them downstairs into this back stairway room and shut the door. And there would be people following Hamlet bringing this person. The second that they get to this door, Hamlet brings them in and then kind of just without dignifying their existence, kind of casts them aside, shuts the door, and then everyone's left wondering what's happening in there. And Hamlet himself, the scene would start, and all you have is a candlelight, and Hamlet would take you down into the stairs and show you a skull, which is, you know, referencing...
The iconic skull. One person and I got to see the iconic skull.
Hamlet would be, you know, a foot away from you, sometimes closer, giving you some bits and pieces of monologues from Hamlet, and then it would end with Hamlet really just call almost like sitting on your lap asking you if
call
he was a coward.
Saying, call me coward.
Call me
and then
coward.
After he asks you if he's a coward, he says, call me a coward.
Call me coward.
And he will keep going until you do it. And then you have to write coward on him.
He has you finish the word coward. And then at that point, he gets the idea for the play within a play. And then leaves you. Leaves the door. He puts the mask on you. He opens the door and then goes on to the next moment.
He runs off and runs away. You were left sitting there. And everyone who had just kind of... So there's some people who stood by the door wondering what was going on. Door opens and then that person walks out. And the person's like, what happened? And the person's talking. And he's like, he made me do this coward thing. And Austin was, I don't know, but it was intense.
One of the ideas that came up during my conversation with Spencer was this idea of theater and hauntings being a lot alike.
As we talked about, theater itself is a residual haunting effect. The same thing happens.
He said that theater was something that you'd repeat again and again, night after night, as a way to get the meaning out of a story, to make sense of it. And the way that we think about hauntings works a lot like that. Ghosts repeat their story again and again, night after night, as a way to make sense of what happened to them. Now, that idea is something that reminded me a lot of a conversation that I had with my father.
I am John Thorpe.
He's a social worker, and I asked him if he thought ghosts were something he could believe in, and he had this to say.
I just think they're people or entities or beings that have been stuck, that they're retelling something about retelling, and I just know that that's consistent with children, you know, do a lot of repetitious things and they verbalize repetitiously, and it's because they're trying to get this thing out, they're trying to get it figured out, or people who have gone through trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, they try to get this thing out, and they got to keep retelling that story. And we would tell them, you know, every time you keep retelling that story, it's like this big balloon inflated in your head, and every time you tell it, you let a little bit of the air out until finally you're at peace with it, and it's no longer, you know. So I think it's that story, and it's, you know, if you have a story, you've got a relationship, and you're trying to understand all those relationships, and you're trying to put them in some kind of a meaningful perspective. I mean, that's what we as human beings are all about, is trying to find some sort of a meaningful perspective. And once we find that meaningful perspective, you know, we have a lot more sense of peace and a greater sense of being.
To be or not to be.
And then there would be times where everything kind of comes to a focal point. The ending fight is one that involved just about everybody. Mm-hmm. In about two rooms, like that's where we brought everyone together. There was another key point during Hamlet's To Be or Not To Be. We do the speech in its entirety, but when we would use the music to lead us up to that point, and when the music started to fade out, the specific song started to fade out, all the actors knew that it was time for Hamlet's speech. So all of these actors would just kind of go and find a place and maybe close the doors again or hide off. So then at one point, the music has stopped. The ghosts are nowhere to be found. The audience is left wondering what the hell is going on. And then all of a sudden, all of the radios in the house, then all of a sudden you hear a click, and To Be or Not To Be starts playing throughout all of the radios live.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the sling and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep, no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep, perchance to dream, aye, there's the rub.
So this idea of confronting a situation by telling and retelling as a source of alleviating some internal buildup of pressure reminds me of a project I once heard of.
It's a cutting board that's about heartbreak.
That's Darlie Kine. She's the brains behind this project.
Theme oriented. And so the cutting board is supposed to be like when you are in those, like after a breakup, or it can be like a friend, a fight with a friend, somebody you cooked a lot with in your kitchen, when there's like this absence and it's all haunted by the memories of like the meals that you cooked, you're supposed to use this cutting board and like cut into it to erase the ghost. And it comes with these instructions.
So part of what I take away from this is that all it takes for a place to be haunted is a memory. In this case, the memory of a breakup and a kitchen. Because like memories, stories echo off the walls. And so similar to how you can tell a story over and over and over again as an attempt to kind of pull the meaning out of a story, this cutting board, the act of repetitively chopping into it, is a way to eradicate those ghostly presences.
Because it's well known in Hamlet that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern die, but that death happens off stage. So we wanted to explore that. We discovered that perhaps Rosencrantz and Guildenstern were in on it with Claudius, and then at some point maybe they second-guessed whether they should be doing what they're doing or not, and by that point it was too late, and Hamlet had already decided their fate, and so we took bits and pieces and elements and specific phrases of words that happened earlier in the show, and then we reapplied their meaning to their death. So eventually we know that Hamlet has killed Polly, Polonius, and so we need to know where the body is. We need to find it. And so we end up finding Hamlet. We ask him where it is. He gives us his very cryptic Hamlet language. He says, you know, it is with dust. And we need to know where this body is. We need to find it. And so eventually we get a little hostile with him. And we just need to cut the BS and say, show us where it is. So he says, all right, come follow us. And he runs off. And so we just go, dang it. So now we need to go start finding Hamlet again. And this echoes what happened earlier when we needed to find Hamlet the first time. We start exploring the house again, trying to find Hamlet. We eventually lose him, but then we hear the seance is happening. We then find that we recognize that he's downstairs. We come down, and there is another seance happening. Hamlet is being enveloped by his father's murderous spirit, all of this stuff. So then we see this Hamlet that we have never seen, and it freaks us out. So we run and hide. And that's a one-on-one for us. We will grab somebody while we run, and then we hide in a closet and shut all the lights off so that this one person experiences us fearing for our lives and repeating lines from the show to ourselves. And then all of a sudden the music cuts out. It's ominous. All you hear is the echoes of your voice and your breathing. And then Hamlet starts reciting,
"Come, gentlemen,"
which was from earlier. Whenever he finds us or needs us, he says, "Come,
gentlemen."
So then we slowly walk our way around, and we can't find him in this dark basement where you can't see, you know, 2 feet in front of your face, and there's people following from behind us. So we go to where we think Hamlet is.
Where he's been calling from.
Where he's been calling from, and we don't find him. Hamlet has hid up in the rafters of the room. So he's, like, up in, like, the pipes. But he leaves a note on the floor that we find. And so we go, we pick up the note, and we look at it, and the note says, "Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead." We read that out loud, and as we start reading this thing, Hamlet then comes down from the pipes and slowly comes up from behind us with a telephone cord, puts it in front of our throats, and then he switches off the light, and then in the darkness, all you hear is the sounds of being two guys being strangled to death.
So I think the ideas of echoes and repetition that Walk the Night explores speaks to one of our ultimate anxieties in life, and that's that horrible feeling of not knowing why things are the way they are and how things actually end. The production allows you to explore all the threads that led up to the death in the play, each night allowing you to explore a different side of the story, and ultimately, you get to see all the different angles that led up to the end.
When everyone dies. When these ghosts show you how they all died, basically. After it all happens, you had Horatio, who was the one person from the modern day. The audience has one connection to the modern day. He says his last lines, and then the ghosts again begin coming up and going back into the house and going back into their places where they were. And you as an audience were then shuffled off outside. And then as you were outside, you turned and looked at the house, and all the ghosts gave you one last look, and then the lights shut off and went down, and you were sent on your way. So the idea behind that whole thing, and we did 2 shows a night, so the idea behind it was that that's doomed to walk the night, is that all these ghosts would go back into their places where they lived in this house, and we do it again, over and over again, trying to find some way to get out. And they feel that if they let their story be known, maybe they can be set free, but they never are.
Special thanks goes to Liz Thorpe for providing some of the amazing music you heard in this episode. Thanks also to Lisa Michelonis for helping us with all things legal. John Thorpe, Solace Michelonis, Casey Bowker, Podcast Junkies, and everyone who gave us a review. Thank you for the support. Thanks also to Starly Kine for your insight. And thanks to 99U for letting us use the clip.
The Looncast is produced and hosted by Ben Thorpe, Phil Russell, Shira Kresh, and myself, Evan Michelonis. Thank you, Spencer and Bill, for telling us about Walk the Night. If you are interested in learning more about the show, you can check them out at www.walkthenightwithme.com or on Facebook. We're setting out in August for a tour of the continental U.S., all in hopes of gathering great stories about death, belief, and the supernatural. Search the Looncast on Indiegogo.com and check out our crowdsourcing campaign. Any donation you can give will help us go that much further. If you haven't already, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and make sure to subscribe on iTunes. Your reviews are what help us climb the list. Thanks again for listening.
My girl, don't you lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? In the pines where the sun never shines, and you're cold the whole night through. My girl, oh, where will you go when the cold wind always blows? In the pines where the sun never shines, and cold the whole night through. She once loved an angel.